But here we've got Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar just went through an awesome experience, right? And the Lord really touched his life, in a sense, with this dream and this young man, Daniel, in the interpretation of it, telling him of the dream and then the interpretation of it, really got his attention because it was an impossibility in his life. And so as we ended chapter 2, you said, man, this guy Nebuchadnezzar, he must have pulled it together and just, that was it. He just started living for Christ, and it was a happy ending, right? Eternity, right, with Jesus. And you get that impression that he was really hit home with it, but it didn't take long. And a lot of times in us, it doesn't take long, you know. We experience the Lord, and then all of a sudden, something comes along, and it distracts us, whether it's in the flesh or whatever. It distracts us. And it did the same thing here with Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, Daniel here, he was so impressed with Daniel in the latter part of chapter 2 that he promotes him, and then Daniel petitions for his friends, and they're promoted too to oversee providence of Babylon. And then Daniel would sit at the king's gate, and he would judge the things that went on in the king's palace or house or whatever you want to call it. But as we pick up in chapter 3 here, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold. You know, God used the idolatry of that day, right? Because God knew that he needed to get attention of Nebuchadnezzar in a certain way because he was attracted to this idolatry. You know, he was attracted to it. So the Lord, within his dream, gave him this image of this huge, huge metallic figure, you know, and used it to influence Nebuchadnezzar. But it wasn't sure. It was shortly after that Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and its width 6 cubits, so 9 feet wide, yet 9 stories high. If you can only picture that, that's a skinny, to me anyway, it's kind of a skinny looking statue or image of gold. But it was a lot of gold. It was a mess of gold. So he, you know, in the prophecy of the different kingdoms or the different empires that he, that the Lord showed him in that image originally was gold. Remember the head being gold, and that was Mr. Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom. The Babylonian kingdom was on top. It was the head. It was the elite of all four of them. But he would take that and he would say, you know what? That's God's image, not mine. And so he would defy God and make his own image. And he wanted everybody to know that he was the gold. He was the top of the crop, you know, or the cream of the crop. And he wanted everybody to know that this was his image. He was the gold. He was the empire that really was at the top. And he set it up in the plains of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word and gathered together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, all the office officials of the province to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, in psaltery, in symphony, with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and symphony, and all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So here he sets it up, and there's a command, and there's a consequence. There's always a consequence, right, to our faith. There's always a consequence to our faith. And as we walk, we grow in Christ, and hopefully closer and closer to Christ, more solid, our faith becomes more, perhaps a little less faith and a little more concrete, right, as we grow. And we grow closer and just tighter to Christ. And we start believing in anything, you know, anything that the Lord says, we do and we believe in it. But we got a purpose in our heart that when certain things are presented to us, whether it be consequences we like or consequences we don't like, right? Because it could be something we like and we shouldn't do. Right? It could be something that the devil just wants to tempt us with and we shouldn't be doing it, you know. But we got a purpose in our heart. Remember Daniel at the beginning? He purposed in his heart that he was going to serve the Lord, and he did. And we said this before, it wasn't that he got to that position and said, I think I'm going to serve the Lord today, even though they tell me to bow down to this image, or these three young men here that we're going to talk about. No, he got there and he said, he got there and it was already done. It was already purposed in his heart. So it's very important that us as Christians, what are we going to do when we come upon a situation that might be scary? We might be intimidated by that person. Are we going to say yes or are we going to say no? You know, we deal with it subtly every day, right, with people. When the door is open, gee, should I say something? Or do I fear the reaction, you know? And so we've got to decide that before the situation even comes about in us. Are we willing? Are you willing to stand for Christ in that moment when things aren't as easy, right? It's very easy with us here, right? If I walked up to you right now and said, what do you believe? Who do you believe Jesus is? I bet you would tell me. Right? He's the Son of God. He's the Savior of the world. He came. He was crucified. He died. He rose again. You would tell me this, right? But what would you tell me? What would you tell 100 people in a room that were atheists? Would we walk in there and be delightful to tell them about Jesus? And tell them about who we believe in. Who we trust in, you know? Would we be willing to? So it's important that we purpose in our heart, whatever the situation is that God gives us, that we're ready, that we're prepared. You know, it's not even so much prepared in knowledge, right? It's prepared in heart. Because Daniel didn't prepare in knowledge. Where was he schooled? He was schooled in the Chaldeans. With the Chaldeans, with the world. What did he purpose? Or where did he purpose? He purposed in his heart, right? Big difference. When we purpose in our heart, we can decipher what goes into our head, what is truth and what isn't, you know. But we've got to purpose that in our hearts. Verse 6 there says, whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fire. So there isn't going to be any second chance here. It's going to be immediate. You know, and I want you to look at Revelation with me, Revelation 13. I'm sure that Pastor Bob will eventually get here. But But I want you to look at something here, because those that experience, I pray nobody here experiences the tribulation. Nobody here, right? That we've accepted Christ as our Savior. That Christ comes back, He receives us in, and we go to be with Him forever. That would be our hope. If we experience the tribulation, this is what you could see, or would see. Verse 11 of chapter 13. Then I saw another great beast, coming out of the earth, and he had two horns, had two horns like a lamb, and spoke like a dragon. And he exercised all the authority of the first beast, which is mentioned earlier in the chapter. So you can go back and read about that. In his presence, and the causes of the earth, and those who dwell in it, to worship the first beast, whose deadly wounds was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth. That's his whole mission here, is deception. By those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. So sound familiar? Making an image. He, which is really the false prophet here, was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. And the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their hand, on their right hand, or on their foreheads. And that no one may buy or sell except that those who have the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. So very similar story. See, prophetically, Daniel talks about the end times. He talks about the tribulation. He talks about that period of time in which these things would happen. And whether Nebuchadnezzar knew this or not, this was all God's plan of a vision for us to confirm what God said in His Word through the prophecy of Daniel and the revelation of Revelation. Right? And so it's neat to see the correlation there, and to see how God is telling us, showing us this time in history that will come to fruition. And what's interesting is, as we read through that, it said that everybody was going to bow down. It didn't matter if you're rich, poor, wise, knowledgeable, beautiful, ugly. It didn't matter, right? Kind of the same thing verse 7 says. All the people, nations, language, it didn't matter where you're from, what country you're from, what language you spoke, there was no discrimination. Everybody was going to bow down. Didn't matter. It was almost like they were overcome by the command of that king, Nebuchadnezzar. They were so overtaken by the fear that they were going to, in order to avoid the consequence, they would bow down to the image. Verse 8, Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Doesn't that sound familiar? Do you remember that, chapter 2? Right? When he was asked, hey, can you guys possibly tell me my dream and then interpret it? They said, "Oh God, let, you know, oh King, live forever." It was a pumping up. It was hopefully the King will delight in what we're saying and, you know, like us enough not to kill us, because they knew Nebuchadnezzar. So they actually try it again here. And this time it seems to work, you know. Why is that? Well, I think Nebuchadnezzar in the time of chapter 2, when he was looking for the dream, man, he knew it was serious. Man, what he saw in his dream, have you ever got up from a dream and just went, wow, that was vivid? Like one time I was dreaming and it was like, I had all this money. It was so real to me. I woke up, I thought I really did. Right? Have you ever had one of them dreams? You know? The check bounced the day before, and then that day you got all this money, and you're like, wow, I got all this money? Woke up, or, you know, my mom was in my dream. Well, she had been dead for 10 years. I woke up, and it was so vivid. I was like, what year is it? You know, like, you know, have you ever had one of them? It was just so vivid. Well, I think for Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2, it was so vivid that it really got his attention. There was no real pride here involved with him. He was just, man, he wanted to know from a standpoint of just knowing. And now, oh yeah, everybody likes my image, and that's good, you know. Oh, King, live forever. And he kind of takes it and really it settles with him that time, and he's pleased with what they say. It says, "You, O King, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony, with all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the gold image, and whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast in the midst of a burning fury fire furnace." There are certain Jews, so here they go, they're going to tattle on them. There are certain Jews whom have set over the affairs of the providence of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O King, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you set up. So they bring back, you know, they praise the king, and then they bring back these three young men and in a sense really put them up front and say, see, they just don't respect you, King, like we do, you know. Next verse, it says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony, with all kinds of music, and shall fall down and worship the image which I have made good, but if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fury furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" So they know the consequence up front. They don't do it. And the Chaldeans find them out. They tattle on them. The king, in fury, comes back to him and says, "Look, it. If you don't, I'll give you one more chance. I'll give you one more chance. You know, if you'll do it, I won't hurt you. But if you do it, don't, I'm going to hurt you." And what happens here is a lot of us back down. We say, "Well, okay, let us second guess what the Lord showed us, and let us not. Well." Is it really worth dying for? You know? This is a golden image. You know, is it really worth it? How much better am I alive than dead, you know, to the Lord? I mean, how can the Lord use me if I'm dead? Bottom line is, He uses a lot of dead people. Right? We want to be dead. We want to be dead to the self. We want to get in them situations where we purposed in our hearts and said, "You know what? I think God can use me dead. Right? And we don't want to dishonor God. Right? We don't want to dishonor God. We'd rather dishonor the king than dishonor God. Right? So I want to make sure that when we get there, we're ready. We're ready, even though the temptation here for these young men is to set aside their values, to set aside who they really worship, and just for a moment deny Christ. But they don't, you know. So in verse 16 it says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, you knucklehead. No, it doesn't say that really. Different translation. We have no need to answer you in this matter. What are they saying? They're saying, you know that we're not going to do what you want us to do. We worship one God. You know the answer already. You know? If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. Here we go. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor do we worship the golden image which you have set up. So often we get enticed, in a sense. You know, we think of enticement as being, well, this is nice. You know, this is, has a nice feel to it. And it makes us feel good. And it's kind of enticing. But fear can be enticing, too. Because fear can entice us not to do something that we should stand for. You know, should entice us away from what we should stand for. So we got to be careful that our fear, our flesh, doesn't overtake us in such a way that we deny the Lord. Get it. Verse 19, then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, if you remember. End of chapter 2, right? He was ready to hand over the keys to the kingdom, in a sense, to them. Right? He liked these guys, man. Daniel liked them, and he liked them. He promoted them to be over head of provinces in Babylon, and he thought these guys were pretty nifty. You know, he really liked them. But here it says that his expression on his face changed toward him. It was almost in disgust. How could you? You know, how could you dishonor me? You know. And he spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace, and command that they heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. You know, this furnace was probably used to melt the gold and to purify the gold and to get it ready for the sculpture, to get the image in the right, you know, so it glared just nicely, you know, as they purified the gold. You can imagine the gold just shined on this image. You know, it had all the dross and all the junk out of the metal now. But this was the furnace, and you know, they were going to turn it up seven times. And I was going to look up how much that meant, but you got to imagine as we move forward here, it was a lot of heat. A lot of heat in verse 20, and he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fury furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fury furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent, the furnace exceedingly hot, the flames of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the midst of the burning fire. You know, you look at these three young guys being thrown into the fire. You know, it's really that whole fire is just the, you know, as we know it, you know, is just the typology in a sense of the Spirit of God and how powerful it is, right? And as we get into the Spirit of God, how powerful it is to fend off our enemies. You know, there is no fear when we're inside the will and will of God, and when we're in the Spirit, there is no fear. You know, I'm hoping that all of us have walked in that at one point where we're like, wow, you know, I should have been afraid in that situation, but I really wasn't. You know, I remember one time we went to. You guys will, I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not, but there's a place in Pennsylvania called The Castle. You ever heard of it? Ever experienced it? It's a Calvary Chapel thing, you know. Pastor, when Calvary Chapel was first getting going out here, that's one of the places that Pastor Chuck would rein in a lot of the pastors around the area. And he would teach them there. And, you know, Finger Lakes, we just started picking it up and helping the guy fix up the retreat center. It's an awesome story of how he got where he is today with it all. But we went up there, and it was a matter of fact, it was Shepherd School. They always do a Shepherd School end of October down there, and it was you know, 2 weeks of Bible. You know, it's a pretty amazing thing, right around the clock, pretty much, and a lot of prayer, and you know, they have a lot of the pastors come in and teach, and just an awesome time to lay back and listen to the Lord. And I heard a lot from the Lord when I was up there that 2 weeks. But one of the things was we had went up there and we had been driving. We went to town and a bunch of us got in a car and we started heading down towards this town. And it was the weirdest thing. We were going down this hill and this car passes us, you know. That wasn't weird. But we got going a little ways and see his lights come on, his brake lights. And he stops right in the middle of the road. I mean, not in right on the yellow line. He straddled the yellow line. And he came back to us, and it was so weird. I think he was on drugs, but he came back to us. He was looking for a girl, and he thought we had the girl in our van. Man, we don't have any girl in our van. And it was really a enemy moment in a sense, because, man, the Lord just... You know, this kid went to hit me because my window was down. And as a matter of fact, my door was open, right? And the Lord said, grab the door and shut the door. And his hand was in the door. And I shut his hand in the door. And it was amazing because I drove off. We drove off and we watched the kid for a while. He wouldn't leave us. He wanted us, you know. And I remember him standing at the corner of this intersection. And he said, he was trying to get somebody to help him. And I thought he knew half the town. Really, he acted like he knew half the town, right? Said, hey, these guys got a girl in their car. I want that girl. That girl's mine. And this and that, you know. And I'm like, oh, man. So, this one vehicle goes by, and they're talking to him. So I'm thinking, oh, no, here's like a truckload of guys, and they're going to swap us and beat us to smithereens, you know. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah. So we're praying, you know, and we're just sitting, waiting, and finally I go, I've had enough of this. I'm not living in this fear anymore. I'm going to go up into that parking lot, and that guy's going to pull out here. I'm going to get out and confront him. Bottom line, you know? So, all the other guys think I'm nuts. Oh, no, Fred lost his rocker, right? They're bigger than I am. And so I get it. We go into this parking lot. It's semi-lit. So it's like a supermarket, you know. And so I get up there and I see this truck come up that I thought were their friends. And they pull up side of us. I said, that's it. I get out of the car. I go around there and the guy looks at me. He goes, you okay? I go, yeah, I'm okay. He said, okay, we're just here to protect you, kind of thing. I mean, they were just there. They were following us to make sure this guy didn't do anything weird. It was the weirdest thing, you know. But I think it really was the Lord just protecting us, you know. And I really think that sometimes when we get into fear moments, you know, the spirit is so much stronger than anything the enemy could even handle, you know. It's like these three guys getting thrown into the fire, you know. It's like the Lord's there with you. Do you know that? The Lord is with you all the time, and that you don't have to fear what the enemy is going to do to you. And these guys didn't, obviously, right? Because, you know, they can kill a body, but they can't really, they can't do nothing to our spirit, you know, because it's the Lord's. Forgot which verse I was on here. Then King Nebuchadnezzar, I'll start at 21. If I read it once, we'll read it again. How's that? Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the midst of the burning fury furnace. King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, "Did we not cast three bound in the midst of the fire?" And they answered and said to the king, "True, O king." "Look," he answered, "I see four men loosed, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." The only thing that was burned off from was what was binding them. You know, the enemy so much wants to throw us in the fire, but and bind us and hold us back from what the Lord has got, the purpose the Lord has got for us, but the Lord takes that, and he burns off all the bindings. You know, everything that binds us and doesn't allow us to do as the Lord's asked us to do, he burns that all off. And loosens us so that we're able to serve him in that. And he protects. It's truly here a picture of how the Lord just is there with us, you know. And this in itself is a typology, right? The whole fire being, in a sense, the tribulation period of where there's going to be the Jews, you know, and these three young men could be a typology. The typology of the, if we went a little further in Revelations, we would have saw the 144 Jews, right? And that's a typology of the Jewish people as they go through the tribulation period, and how the Lord is going to protect them through that fiery time, and how he's going to bring them out in the end. You know, it's not the Jehovah Witnesses like they think, you know, it's the Jews. You know, I don't know how they come up with that, by the way. But it's a, so here we never see Daniel here, you know, and you wonder, did Daniel fall? Did he fall down in front? And did he really succumb to the pressures of the king here and fall down and worship? Perhaps maybe he had just a, you know, a fall like Peter and just worship the idol. But I don't think so. You know, there's too much in Daniel that tells us differently about Daniel himself. You know, the purposing of his heart. Later on, we'll read where he was a prayer warrior. You know, he got into prayer, and so there's no signs of that. So don't be thinking that. But I think what it is a picture of the church here. You know, Daniel's a picture of the church. Where's the church in the time of the tribulation? The church has been raptured up. Daniel's out of there. He's not there at the time. Shows us the rapture of the church. Typology of the rapture of the church. But also in Psalm 34, 34, 1 through 9, you can read this on your own, but it really is where David has a similar experience as well as the boys did in chapter 25, where he really feels secure in the Lord. You know, he finds that security in the Lord, that the Lord is there with him and he sees him there. Verse 26, then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fury furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High, come out, come here, and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire, and the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together. And they saw these men on whose body the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angels and delivered his servants, who trust in him, and they have frustrated the king's words and yield their bodies, that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, and language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made as ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the province of Babylon. He saw it again. There is no other God. There is no other God that can perform such a miracle as this, that can take and burn off the bondage that the enemy puts on there. And then he not only frees them from that bondage, but the Lord walks beside them after that bondage. I remember my sister had a great friend that she witnessed to year after year, day after day, it seemed. They worked together, him and my brother-in-law actually worked together, and probably would consider him his best friend. And my sister and brother-in-law saved, knew the Lord, you know, and just witnessed to this guy day in and day out. And my sister challenged him one day and said, look it, we've exhausted what we can say to you, and it's got to be God now. I don't want to talk to you about it. Some tough things she said. She said, and my sister's pretty bold, so she would say, hey, you know what? I've told you everything the Lord showed me, and you still don't want to believe. Now you got to go and you got to read the book, and you got to decide for yourself who you're going to follow. And Glenn was addicted to coke and professional, fired many a times because of his addiction, couldn't pass a drug test to save his life. And he went and read the book. He was convinced there was a God. And he accepted him, not like Nebuchadnezzar here, but he accepted what the Lord said to be true, you know. He gave his life to Christ. And God took those. Them bonds that he was bound by, the enemy. And he took them, and he loosed them. And then he walked with them. He didn't leave them. He didn't leave them in the fire. He brought him out of the fire, and he walked with him until he died. He died because of his addiction. He never did coke again, that we know of. But the coke ruined his body. And at 40 years old, he died. But the point is that God frees us. Whatever that is, his was drugs. Some of us can say that we've never been there, right? Never been on that side. Never experienced that bondage. But all of us have experienced sin. We've all experienced that. We can't deny it. We just have. And until we deal with it, until we get right with the Lord, until we allow him to burn off them bonds that the enemy has bound us with, we can't really walk with him very well. We're always in that fire, you know, we're always struggling. We're always feeling the heat of the enemy, and we never seem to get past that point. Well, gee, I've asked the Lord so many times. I've repented. I've heard guys say that so many times. I've repented from doing what I shouldn't be doing. The bottom line is, people don't repent nowadays. They just come to church. And they think something's going to happen, and that it's going to erase the memories, and it's going to erase the troubles in their lives. And all of a sudden, they find out that they really need to repent, you know, and get right with the Lord. So my challenge tonight is that this church is never going to be free unless you are. It's never going to be used unless you're free from the bonds, you know, that the enemy has got around you. And if you have any of those, I want to pray with you tonight that you would. Because this world needs Jesus. Needs him bad. And sometimes we're it. We're the ones that'll show them. And I want to challenge each one of you because, you know, Jesus in the end, you know, as he was talking about the end times in Matthew, he was, you know, the wedding is always, Jesus is always thinking about the wedding that he's going to have that day with us. As the bride and the bridegroom come together. And as he looks at the ten virgins, remember the five wise and the five foolish. And some of them were prepared, man, for Jesus to come. They were ready. And the others weren't. They weren't ready. Boy, but they looked like virgins. They were virgins, weren't they? They appeared to be virgins. But they weren't ready. Were they really? The Lord really struck me this week. Are we ready? Are we ready for him to come? Are we doing this chapter 25 of Matthew? Are we looking at the poor and putting a blind eye to it, you know? We have so much promise here. We really do, you know, in this church. We have so much promise to be a light to the world. And hey, man, we have Jesus, right? There's what else do you need, right? And so we have that promise because we have him. What are we doing with it, you know? Are we going to take chapter 25? I want you to go home tonight. I want you to read through that. I want you to challenge your heart and where you're at. Because there's so many self-seeking people. I don't want to be one of them. I want to lay it all down. I want to make my walk with him the most important thing that I have. Right? I want you guys to take a look at your lives, and I want you to say, you know what? I want it to be it. I don't mean coming to church. I just mean walking with him. Doing the things he's asked us to do. I look at chapter 25, and I don't know how people read it and not say that's for us, Christians. Nah, let somebody else. You know, the Lord just hasn't called me to the ministry to give to the poor. No. Read chapter 25. I think you'll be convicted that he has. That's us. That's us. You know, we deny so many times. People come and they go, I just want to know the will of God. Read chapter 25. That's a good start. That's a good start. You know, we feed, we give drink to those that are thirsty. It's like feeding Jesus. You want to be at his feet? Feed somebody that's poor. Feed somebody that can't give back to you. You want to be a servant? Make sure they can't give you nothing. Right? It's so easy to give to somebody when they're given to you. But when they don't give back, maybe they even treat you pretty bad. And you still love them. That's Jesus. So I challenge you tonight to take a look at chapter 25. Challenge yourself. You know, we need to challenge ourselves in our walk, I think. I do, anyways. I need to say, Fred, where are you today? You know, where are you? Are you doing the things that the Lord wants you to do, or are you doing the things that your flesh wants you to do? And we got to challenge ourselves in that if we want to draw closer to Jesus.